Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
You're listening to the Weekend Warrior Show, presented by Cedar Sinai on ESPN LA 710 and the ESPN app.
What's going on, L.A.? This is Kobe Bryant.
That's right. Mahalo. Aloha.
Start your weekend off right. Listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
Ahui hoi.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN, 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
The Dolphins make me cry. How could a fish make you cry? Oh, when the fish tastes so good, it'll bring tears to your eyes. Of course, if you have it with onions, you'll get tears to your eyes also. I was watching the Food Channel show, The Best Thing I Ever Ate. And there's Wolfgang Puck talking about the best thing he ever ate was a lox and bagel sandwich from Wexler's Deli in Los Angeles. And it immediately went to my heart because my father gave himself no vacations, no days off. The only treat he ever gave him from working hard 24/7 as a carpenter was Sunday mornings. I got to go in the truck with him to the appetizing store called Toddy's with sawdust on the floor so that he can indulge himself. The one indulgement he had in his life was having a slice of lox, cream cheese, a bagel, pickled herring. This was what he loved. And Sunday mornings, that's what was in the Clapper house, was my dad having this beautiful, expensive slice. It's thin. You could see through the slice. I learned all about sharp knives. It's nice to see those sushi chefs and their knives. Let me tell you something. You got to have a really sharp knife to cut that salmon so thin. And I couldn't wait. Well, he's in Los Angeles. I know Ben Lyons knows Michael Wexler. Maybe we can get him on the show. And at 8:15, I cannot wait to talk to him. And the more I learned about Michael Wexler and his partner, Michael Kassar, is the passion. You don't make the very best of anything unless you are working hard and you're confident that you can do it, that you can pull it off, and the desire and the drive to do it better than anybody else. So, you know, I love the world of sports, the world of art, the world of surgery. Where do you see passion for salmon, for lox? Where am I going to find that? In the world of sports. And then I remembered my favorite Angel player before Mike Trout came along, who's also a fish, by the way, Trout, was Tim Salmon, who helped them strategically win the World Series in 2002. Tim Salmon, he batted 346 in those World Series against the Giants. He's the first guy in 1995 to get a hit off of Mariano Rivera. Mariano Rivera did not let anybody get a hit off of him. His art with the baseball bat. He still holds the record, 299 home runs for the Angels. Tim Salmon's story, his name is Salmon, but the passion, the confidence, he wanted to end his career on his own terms. 2005, he had rotator cuff and knee surgery. Could have retired after 13 years. No, he came back from those surgeries and played in 2006 because he wanted to end his career on his own terms. Tim Salmon, you talk about lox and passion. It comes from a salmon. It comes from Tim Salmon. Let's hear a little bit about Tim Salmon's life, and you'll hear the passion and the confidence in his own voice. Rebecca, let's go Tim Salmon, Garrett Anderson, reflect on careers 1 through 6.
My dad was supposed to be watching me, and he was watching the news, and my mom came in and asked where I was, and the mad hunt started, and they found me literally across the park, on the other side of the park, leaning up against a screen watching the Little League game. So it must have been, you know, destiny.
It's in your blood. Destiny. It's in your blood,
Tim Salmon. You're playing all the sports. I played football, played basketball, baseball. We played what was ever in season, and we took them all seriously, I guess, to some degree. But it wasn't until after high school that it really became like, okay, this is it. This is your focus.
But he played with a chip on his shoulder. This is why.
This thick of every scout that came to see me play from every organization, and every one of them had a different story, but they're all like, you're my first pick, my first, you know, all that stuff. You know, you're just sitting there waiting by the phone. You know, you knew it started like at 8 o'clock in the morning or something. And I remember a summer day, you know, just hanging around. Dad's at work. Nobody else is around the house. And I'm just waiting for a phone call. And, you know, days passing, nothing happens. And I'm like, what on earth? I mean, you know, did I not get drafted? What's going on? And then the next day, it was a writer from Tucson called and said, the Angels drafted you. And I was like, oh, okay. And then he said third round. And I was like, what? Third round? Are you kidding me? I mean, I was so blown away. I was so mad. And I'm like, I'm going back to school. Forget this.
Don't piss Tim Salmon off.
You know, I don't want to go play somewhere where that the system's that messed up, you know? And then the next day.
Wasting no time showing the teams that passed on him in the draft that that was a very big mistake, Tim Salmon won the Baseball America Minor League Player of the Year Award in 1992, and in 1993 was named the American League's Rookie of the Year.
Rookie of the Year.
It's been a tremendous year for me. I've really enjoyed it, and this is just the icing on the cake, and I'd like to thank the Baseball Writers Association for choosing me for this award.
When it happened, I thought it was pretty cool. Mike Piazza won it on the other side, you know, of L.A. there, and the Dodgers locked up Mike Piazza. Then the media looked squarely at the eyes of the Angels and said, what are you going to do to your Rookie of the Year? And they came and, you know, negotiated a multi-year deal. Year before, I was making $12.50 a month in Edmonton, and, you know, $900 of it was going to rent, to all of a sudden, a year later, I'm Rookie of the Year, and I'm signing a, you know, a 3 or 4 year deal for like $10 million. It's like, oh my gosh. I mean, what a change of fortune. So now you know you're going to be in the big leagues for the next 2 or 3 years. I mean, you're not going to be sent down. The team's got money in you. So it really immediately solidified the fact that I was a major leaguer. You know, the financial part of it was nice, but more importantly, it was just the fact that, okay, I can relax. I'm going to be in the lineup every day for the next 3 or 4 years. Just go out there and play the game of baseball.
Which he loves.
That guy that starts and finishes with one organization. It means so much on this side of the fence, this side of a career. Now that I'm here, you know, at 50 years old, I'm so thankful that happened. Cradle to grave. I mean, always been an Angel. I can walk in this stadium and I have so many friends, lifelong friends, and they're like family to me. And, you know, this is home. This is my home away from home.
He is such a classy guy. But it's that confidence, that chip on his shoulder, the passion for the game, the perfect swing, searching for the perfect swing. Finally, they did a retirement tribute for Tim Salmon. And listen to the kind of player he was. Passion for Salmon. Let's go 1 through 6.
You know, it's one of those times that's inevitable in every player's career. I mean, at some point it's got to end, and I've been blessed. I've been just so blessed to be able to spend my 14 years here in Anaheim and to be able to experience the things, you know, on and off the field that I've been able to experience here. A winner of the World Series, that probably tops it. But, you know, to come to this point today and, you know, you're trying to relive all that and appreciate all that and appreciate the fans and everything they're doing, you know, for me out, you know, with the applauses and everything, It's kind of one of those moments, or I feel like it's one of those times where a week from now, you know, it's going to sink in, but right now it's not quite all sinking in.
Tim Salmon drives one to deep left field, and it's fair, the Angels win! Fair ball!
And I've always felt like I put the team first. I mean, I always wanted to, you know, say that, hey, you know, whatever is going to help this team win. And I recognize, I saw the situation. I knew the situation coming out of spring training. If guys were healthy, there wasn't going to be a whole lot of opportunity to play. But, you know, we got healthy in the second half, and we made a huge run. And we got ourselves in position to be, you know, talking playoff contention. Unfortunately, it ended this week. But, you know, that's what it took. It took having those guys out there that they were counting on winning. And, you know, yeah, it might have been unfortunate not to get in there as much down the stretch, but, you know, I think at the same time, you know, I got to stand back
and you know, mentor some younger guys that were on the bench and really experience the game and appreciate it and take in the things that I might have missed if I had been out there playing every day.
Well, Tim's an angel, and I think that anyone that has played for one team for as long as Tim have and has achieved so much just deserves special recognition.
This is Mike Socha, the manager.
That he's played up here, played on a world championship team here, on playoff teams, and has really been a leader for so long here, both on and off the field. He's a special person. We're fortunate to have had him for this long playing baseball, and he'll cross over and do something in the future, but he's had a great career.
I'm 30 years old, from Long Beach, California, but I grew up in Phoenix. And he smacks that one towards center field, and boy, it almost took off.
Base hit.
And that's a base hit number 1,000 for Tim Salmon.
Bottom half of the 11th inning, the Angels have him loaded.
It's a grand slam home run.
Luis Alcea at second base, Jim Edmonds at first. The Indians lead it 6-4, the Angels looking for a comeback win. The set now by Paul Shuey. Here's the motion of the pitch. Salmon swings, hits it high and deep into left field. This ball has a chance, and it is gone. A grand slam home run, Tim Salmon, and the Angels win it 8-6 in the bottom half of the 11th inning.
He did it his own way, but you can hear the passion, the hard work, the confidence. If you're a baseball player and you're a Salmon, that's what's involved. If you've got passion and you feel you've been called to the fish, it's no different. You want to have that perfect swing of the bat. You want to make that perfect slice of locks with your knife. It sounds crazy, but listen to 85-year-old. At the time, he's 84-year-old. Len Burke. Let's do Locks Me Tender 1-7, talking about how he came upon becoming an 85-year-old guy slicing salmon. Let's do Locks Me Tender 1-7.
84 years old, and I come to Zay Bars every Thursday and Friday. I was a certified public accountant for about 40 years, after which I sold my practice. When I finished that, a friend of mine called me up and said there was an ad in the newspaper that Zay Bars wanted a lock slicer. And I said, I can do that. When I came behind the counter, Saul Zay Bar interviewed me. He couldn't believe that a certified public accountant wanted to slice locks. Work is one of the most important things in life. I have many friends that are ill, can't walk, can't speak, their minds are going. I feel very lucky. I'm in the middle of what is going on today. I slice it, I wrap it, I bag it, I give it. I focus on the job with relative ease because there are only a certain amount of things that I do. When it gets very busy, I feel like a machine. It's as though my body knows what to do without my brain. One of the things I remember about my grandfather, he was a religious Jew, and lobster is not kosher. He used to eat lobster. My father's sister had a fish store in the Fulton Fish Market. My father was very involved with fish. I guess that's when it all started.
Wow.
I enjoy the physical aspects of dealing with the fish.
The art of slicing salmon.
A kid comes in, I pick up a whitefish and point the whitefish at them and say, did you ever kiss a whitefish? I've never tasted two fish that taste exactly the same. The art of slicing salmon is really based on being comfortable with the fish, understanding the anatomy of the fish, and learning the various methods of slicing. I've been trying to make the perfect slice. for about 16 years now. But I know that I haven't achieved it yet. I love running my hand across it. It's a very sensual experience. You could say I'm making love in the sand.
That's passion. The art of slicing salmon. The great Len Burke. Let's go to Last Jewish Lock Slicer at Zabar's 1 through 3.
At 84 years young, Len Burke still finds passion in life and work.
Slicing salmon for me
perfect.
Is a very sensual experience. Take a look at my left hand.
I'm looking.
When you rub the salmon, it's very sensual. So I like that. I like the feel of that.
At 65, Len retired from his accounting business and decided to change careers.
I think work is probably the most important thing in life.
Len followed his heart and his stomach to Zabar's Delicatessen on the Upper West Side. He's been slicing salmon and serving smiles here ever since.
I could see you through this slice. I cannot describe the perfect slice other than to say I've been working to achieve it for many years, and I will know it when I do it.
His boss, 86-year-old Saul Zabar, says Len, like all of his employees, knows how to put the customer first.
You have to be charming, you have to be communicative, you have to be funny, you know.
Is he all that?
He's all that.
In case you think slicing salmon all day might be monotonous, Len says you'd be wrong.
You never know who's going to step up to the counter next. Last week, it was Itzhak Perlman. Week before that, it was Jerry Seinfeld.
So how long will Len keep it up? Well, let's just say retirement is not in his future plans.
I love slicing salmon. I always did. But the real joy here is the people.
The real joy is the people. Searching for that perfect slice. Tim Salmon searching for the perfect swing of the bat. Me as a surgeon for the perfect knee replacement. That's what you strive for in your work. You want the passion. You want the confidence. And coming up next, to make the perfect deli, the perfect lox, here in Los Angeles, we're going to learn all about it from the great Michael Wexler. Coming up next here on the Weekend Warrior Show on 710 ESPN.
Get smart.
Just what are you getting at?
Check out the Weekend Warrior Facebook page.
Like this.
Medical advice from Cedars-Sinai, head of orthopedic surgery.
Are you kidding?
With a Far Rockaway attitude and a little drizzle of mozzarella.
Well, it's important to me.
Search Weekend Warrior in the space bar.
Like this.
And click on Doc's picture.
I see.
Like, follow, and enjoy the Weekend Warrior Facebook page.
You're listening to the Weekend Warrior Show, presented by Cedars-Sinai on ESPN LA 710 and the ESPN app.
What's going on, LA? This is Kobe Bryant.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Start your weekend off right, listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
I'm still quelling.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN, 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
With a little love.
Walk upon the water. Well, there's someone in life who can walk on the water and look through the water and see all the fish that are swimming underneath it. And that's my guest right now. I'm so excited to talk to him, the great Michael Wexler and his partner, Michael Kassar. Thanks so much for joining me this early in the morning. I appreciate it.
Oh, we're so happy to be here, Doctor. Thanks for having us.
First of all, I want to thank Elijah at your place for making sure he called me in my office. You need to have some lox. You need to, before you interview Micah and Michael, you need to have this. And my wife and I ate it last night. And let me tell you something. It's not just because you're on with us right now. It is the best lox I have ever had. And that whitefish, I don't know how you smoke it, but you know what, Michael Wexler? Having Kobe Bryant do the promo for this show and being in love with this show, his hard work, his passion, his confidence. I don't care what you do for a living. You got to do that, especially in your line of work. I want to thank Ben Lyons, by the way, ahead of time for putting us together. Take us back to the beginning, yeah. Michael Wexler. You and your partner, Michael. Where did it come from? What did your dad do for a living? Where did you grow up? How did the food business, like Cupid, shot you in the chest with an arrow and it made you fall in love with us? Take us through it.
I love the way you describe it. It feels so romantic. I grew up here in Los Angeles, born and raised in the Valley in North Hollywood. My family's actually not in the food business at all.
Wow.
My dad was in marketing and advertising, and when I was a kid, he had his own advertising firm, and then eventually he got kind of bored of that and moved into the nonprofit side of the business and started working with all nonprofits. And you know, he's always been a guy that really needed to fulfill his soul, and my parents always instilled in me a very strong value of just, you know, find what it is you're passionate about and go after it, you know, harder than anything else in your life, and just do your best at it. And so that's always been a mantra that I was brought up with. And, you know, whether or not it's always smart to be going after that passion or not is a whole other story we could talk about. But
yep.
That's the direction I went from when I was a young kid. You know, I was always into food, and always had a real passion for it. And I mean, I started cooking, and saying, oh, I want to be a chef one day when I was probably like 10 years old. And I got my first job in a restaurant. We had a distant cousin who owns a restaurant. Place been around for a long time in L.A., Michelli's. And
and
my dad was like, you know what? I have your cousin Joe Michelli. Let's go see him. Maybe he'll give you a job, and you can hang out at the restaurant and cook a little bit. And that was the first restaurant that I ever worked at. And I fell in love with it on day one. And from there, just, you know, went on to work at a lot of great restaurants in Los Angeles, from Spago, Malise, or, you know, worked for Gino Angelini. And then I met my business partner, Mike, when we were at college at Cornell on the East Coast at the hotel school. And we just had this shared passion. You know, he had grown up in New York, and we would always talk about, let's open a restaurant together and let's do things. And that's sort of how it all started.
Unbelievable. You know, only on this show will I somehow connect you with Tim Salmon, the Angel player, and Len Burke from Zabar's. But it all makes sense to me. First of all, I was
loving that Len Burke story, by the way.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, it's forget about the fish. It's the passion. This is what you want to do. You want a career in life. You don't want just a job. And whatever it is that you do, you just want to bring that passion to it.
Oh, you know, it's also great. The guy retires from probably a successful career when he's 65. He doesn't want to move to Florida like most New York Jews do.
Right.
So I'm going to slice locks at Zabar's.
You know, as a surfer, Bruce Brown, who was a good friend of mine, a patient of mine, he made a movie called The Endless Summer. And on the movie, it just says it right there. We're searching for the perfect wave. Tim Salmon, a baseball player, he's searching for the perfect swing of the bat. I guess you also, you're searching, just like Len Burke says, I'm searching for the perfect slice of the locks to make it
translucent. Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. It really spoke to me when he said that, because, you know, so I come from an all fine dining background. I worked in, you know, Michelin star restaurants all over the world before I decided to be crazy and get into the deli business. And it was, you know, sort of not exactly a direct path into it. And when I first started, it was actually very difficult for me, because as a chef, you know, especially in the fine dining world, we're trained that everything is about the creativity and trying to prove why you've got more, better, interesting ideas in your head than the next guy has. And when I started doing Wexler's Deli, when we had our first one that opened in Grand Central Market, Mike and I talked, and one of the things that we said was, you know, we don't want this to be a chefy take on a deli. We want this to be a real deli. You should eat the pastrami sandwich. You should eat the bagel and lox and say, man, this is the best bagel and lox I ever had, or I haven't had it like this since I was a kid. And what that does is really removes that chef ego from the whole picture. And that was really, really hard for me at the beginning. But what I soon got into was this idea of craftsmanship. And I realized, and I would often liken myself to like a blacksmith, you know, that you would see in, mm-hmm. in the old times, that comes in and he hits the iron every single day, but he's trying to make the more perfect sword or the better sword than he made the day before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a different approach that he's taking to it. He's just trying to hone his craft every single day. And once I started to get into that mentality is when things really changed for me, and I really embraced it and really, really ran with it. And then, you know, that's a mentality that we've bred throughout our company now, this idea that we're more craftsmen than we are cooks. And that, you know, what Len Berger was saying of that, you know, hey, I'm slicing the lox every day and I haven't gotten the perfect slice yet, but I know I'm going to get there. I'll know it when I see it. That is, in a nutshell, the craftsman mentality.
I remember Carlos Santana, Eric Clapton, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Jimi Hendrix. Carlos Santana is up there in the Mount Rushmore of guitar players, and he's being interviewed. And they said to him, "You're still playing, Carlos?" "Yeah, I love it." He goes, "Why?" And Carlos Santana said, "Because I'm searching for the perfect note on
sure,
the guitar."
Yeah.
Carlos Santana, he's at Woodstock. He's still playing the game. He's still searching for the damn perfect note. And it's just like Bruce Brown for the perfect wave. You're looking for that perfect slice. I want to ask you specifically about the food business, though, which fascinates me. Yes, you can work in the kitchen your whole life. What does one learn when they go to Cornell for school? Like, what could you possibly learn in the classroom? Can't you just say, I've always felt being a surgeon, I should just be an apprentice for 15 years and then I'll be a surgeon. But actually, you need the books. You need the principles. What did you learn at Cornell?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, it's funny. There are a lot of books and principles and all that. I think like a lot of education versus the real world, most of that stuff goes out the window on day one. Not necessarily in the medical profession like you, but a lot of other ones. I always kind of describe it as like an undergrad business school specified for the hospitality industry. And the funny thing is looking back on it, when I think about what did I really learn there, it wasn't, this paradigm or that paradigm or how to do this or how to do that. It was really a mentality for how to be able to work with people, structure teams, and work towards a common goal and success. Everything they did was geared towards that mentality. And it wasn't until years later when I was doing that all the time and I realized where I picked so much of that up. And that's at the heart of the hospitality business, right? If you think about any restaurant, hotel, club, airline you've ever been to, there's never one person that makes it happen. It's always a team of people that make a great hospitality experience. So that's something that's so important in our business.
You know, for 31 years, I do about over 500 surgeries a year for 31 years, so over 15,000. Lots of them are knee replacements and whatnot. The man who invented...
I'm hoping I never have an appointment with you.
Yeah, don't worry. We'll do the barter system. I'll trade you a knee replacement for some locks. Don't worry.
All right, that's a deal.
The man who invented the knee replacement, his name was Ranawat. He's still alive. He's in his mid-80s. He's the designer. And I was lucky enough in New York to train with him 84 to 88 with the man who actually invented the operation. It was awesome. One day I'm in my office. This has got to be like, I don't know, 15 years ago. My office manager says to me, and his name's Ranawat, says to me, and I'm in the middle of seeing patients, "Hey, Dr. Clapper, Dr. Ranawat's on the phone. He needs to ask you a question." And I won't even get into what the question was, but it was like at that moment I said, okay, I must be doing something right. That my idol, my mentor, my teacher is calling to ask me, what could I possibly know that he doesn't know? What was it like when Wolfgang Puck comes to Wexler's Deli for the first time and Michael Wexler slaves at making this concoction of smoking the fish that Wolfgang Puck says, this is the best I've ever had? What was that like?
I mean, it was incredible. It was an amazing experience for us. You know, I worked for Wolfgang Espago for a short time. But Mike worked there for about 5 years and, you know, started as sort of, you know, junior manager intern status and became the general manager of the whole restaurant and was running the ship. And, you know, it's funny because Wolfgang is one of those people. There's, you know, certain chefs and certain people in every industry that whether or not you actually met them or got a chance to know them in any sort of way, they're a mentor. Right. I remember when Charlie Trotter died, for example, you know, I never met the man in my life, but he was so influential on my career because his cookbook was given to me. One of his cookbooks was given to me at a very young age. I couldn't understand it at all. And I would go back to that cookbook all the time, trying to figure out how to do these things that he was talking about. And I remember the day when I was reading through and said, oh, yeah, I know what that is. I know how to make that. I can do that. And it was such I really considered the man a mentor because of that, but I never met him. So in Wolfgang, which is somebody that I did get the opportunity to meet and to work for, I mean, just a really such an incredible experience to have him say, this is, you know, this is the best salmon right here. I've never tasted anything like it. It's unreal.
Wow.
And, you know, Wolfgang's a big jokester, too, so – you know, being able to have that and his attitude around it and everything. I mean, it was just great. And I've had the opportunity to have other experiences like that in this business too. I mean, I'll tell you one of the great ones within Wexler's Deli. We were open downtown for probably about 3 or 4 months, and you know, every day there was a line that was snaking through Grand Central Market around the corner. And I would, you know, I was back there on the line every day, you know, making sandwiches. And I would look up from time to time just to see who's in the line and what's going on. And I look up at one point, and I catch Norm Langer standing in the line. And,
oh!
You know, Norm Langer, like, you know, this is when I think when we started Wexler's Deli, Langer's was the benchmark for pastrami and rye bread in my head. I was always thinking if I could get to that level, if I could attain close to that level, I would be successful. I would be happy. And that was the deli that I grew up with, going with my grandparents and my sisters and my cousins.
Wow.
And so I see Norm in the line, and I just, like, stop for a second. I'm like, oh, man, Norm Langer's here. And he was there with his daughter, Trish. And, you know, we catch eyes for a second, and he gives me a big smile. And I say to the guy next to me, I said, you know, hold on, I got to step off for a second. And I go out around the counter, and I was just like, I'm so happy you're here. And we had the nicest conversation. It was funny because in those times also, there was so much being written about Wexler's versus Langer's. The new kid on the block is trying to take him down. And I never felt that way. It was always
right.
An homage, always like, this is such a special place in my mind. And he was so, he's like, I'm so happy about what you're doing and the way you're doing it. It's so special. And, you know, he's always been on my side, on my team. And it was such a great experience.
Micah, I love you already. Can you stay on the line? Cause I want to do another segment with you. Would that be okay?
Yeah, of course. Let's do it.
Okay. All right. We'll pay some bills and we're coming back with the great Micah Wexler from Wexler's Deli. What a treat. It's more than the salmon. It's more than the lox. It's passion for your life, for your world, for your work. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on 710 ESPN.
Weekend Warriors on Facebook.
Didn't you get the memo?
Quickly hear Clapper's crazy kitchen stories. Easily find different callers' aches and pain issues.
Right, I get it.
Search Weekend Warrior in the search bar and click on Doc's picture.
Who are you again?
Voila! Like, follow, and enjoy the Weekend Warrior Facebook page.
You're listening to the Weekend Warrior Show, presented by Cedars-Sinai on ESPN LA 710 and the ESPN app.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. You know who that is. That's Carlos Santana, Michelle Branch, Game of Love. This is a guy who's still searching for that perfect note. I'm searching for that perfect use of the scalpel as a surgeon. That perfect slice of salmon, of lox. And nobody appreciates it better than my guest, the great Micah Wexler. Mike, I want to ask you a question. The whole concept that food can be paired. You know, we learn all about, oh, you have to have red wine with meat and white wine with fish. And then you can have sugar and cinnamon and you can have peanut butter and jelly. And they bring out, I remember in Paris, and I went to this amazing restaurant where the dessert was creme brulee that was pistachio flavored with a layer of Valrhona chocolate on top of this pistachio creme brulee. And I remember saying,
"You're killing
wow,
me. That was great.
Chocolate and pistachio." And then in Italy, I sculpt, and I'm in the mountains of Italy, and I get a home-cooked meal by the man who owns the studio's wife, and for the first time, I have pesto on pizza. Not tomato sauce, but pesto is the sauce. The whole idea of matching things up, how do you feel about that in terms of the ingredient is key, making the perfect ingredient, the perfect salmon? But talk to me about, teach me a little bit about pairing food in a meal.
Well, look, I mean, I think, first of all, like you said, there's no question, everything starts with ingredients, right? I mean, the search that we go on as a restaurant, and also myself as just an individual, for sourcing the best ingredients, knowing where they're from, how they're raised, how they're grown, everything that goes into it, is not just a passion and a joy, but it's sort of the foundation of everything. But, mm-hmm. you know, I always think about ingredient pairing, whether it's, you know, food and beverage, like you said, or just food items. There's sort of two categories, okay? There's category number one, which is a lot of fluff, okay? And a lot of rules that people have made up over the year. The idea that, oh, you can only drink this wine with this fish or with this meat or whatever it is. I think that a lot of that should be thrown out of the window. I break those kind of rules all the time, and I'm always fascinated by, wow, these two things that the rule says aren't supposed to go together are actually really beautiful, and I really enjoy them. Mm. But that being said, I think in the second category, there are the true pairings, that when you taste these things and you have these two things together or these three things together, they sing in such a way and have such a harmony to them that it takes you to the next level. And you're like, wow, this is an unbelievable taste experience that I'm having right now. And when those things come together, they're really incredible. And there are some classics that are there. And then there's some, you know, I love sometimes whether it's my cooking or I'm at a restaurant or a friend or whatever it is. And I have something, and I think to myself, I don't know if I've ever had those two things together like that. And it can often go the wrong direction. But when it goes the right direction, you're like, wow, I never would have thought to put that together. But that's just next level delicious. That's really special.
Wow. It's just inspiring to listen to you talk. Forget that you're in the food business, but you could be in any business. The confidence. But to some extent, the fact that probably people along the way told you, you can't do this, just like Tim Salmon not getting drafted, just like Michael Jordan not making his high school basketball team. You know, you go on and on. You almost need a chip on your shoulder to push you forward. Do you feel that you got that chip on your shoulder in the beginning that kind of launched you?
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, I'm a big believer in the chip on your shoulder really – you know, being your gas. And look, when I started in this business, you know, kitchens were a very different place. I always describe them as sort of one of the last places to be modernized into today's world of, you know, some more rules and more HR and being more conscious and everything. But when I started in kitchens, they were still the Wild West and anything went, and they were tough places. So you come in there, mm-hmm. as, you know, a 15-year-old kid, and nobody's being nice to you on day one. Nobody's welcoming you and being like, oh, this is great, right? Everybody's just looking at you as, this is a pain. Why do I have to show this kid? He's slow. He doesn't know anything. He doesn't know what I'm talking about. He doesn't know how to handle a knife, let alone a vegetable peeler. Like, this is a waste of my time, right? So it can be a brutal place. And I remember even, you know, being, I was probably 16 or so, working for Gino Angelini, and who is one of my very close mentors and friends now. But man, if the guy didn't push on me, I mean, he was just after me every day, made it miserable sometimes, you know, he'd scream and yell at me and everything. But, and that is from a very early stage. I remember actually when I was working at Spago, it was soon after college, and it was the hardest restaurant that I had ever worked in, because they were, you know, expecting this high level of execution.
Wow.
And a number of covers that I had never experienced before, right? It's one
Wow.
thing to do, you know, high level tasting menu food when you're serving 80 people. It's another thing when you're serving 500.
Wow.
And it was such a tough environment to work on. And I remember all the time in my head, I would be telling myself, this isn't going to be the restaurant that beats me. I gotta be able to do this. I gotta be able to make this happen. And it was that chip on my shoulder that had to use it to try and push all the time.
Before I let you go, do you have a cousin named Jeremy Wexler?
I don't, no.
Okay. There's nobody Jeremy Wexler. No. Now
I got to meet this Jeremy Wexler, though.
You know, Micah, it is such a pleasure to talk to you, because the true path of life starts with passion. And the trip of 1,000 miles begins with the first step. You are far along the path right now, and I got to tell you, it's the passion in your voice that we can taste in the food that you create. I want to thank you so much for joining us. It's such a pleasure to meet you on the radio.
It was my pleasure too, man. I had a great time, and I'll talk to you anytime. It was really a lot of fun.
Okay, young man. Have a good day today. Thanks so much. That's the great Michael Wexler from Wexler's Deli. Check it out. You can pick up stuff. I got the stuff sent to me, those bagels, the cream cheese that they make. I didn't even ask them about the cream cheese, the lox. Oh, my God. It's a pleasure to have it in Los Angeles. Coming up next, the clinic will be open. I'll take your calls. The number is 877-710-ESPN. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on 710 ESPN.
Holy emoji, clap man. Weekend Warriors on Facebook.
Holy slip disc.
That's right, Robin. Hear listeners talk about their aches and pains.
Holy hamstrings.
Along with Doc's clapper vision.
Breathe deeply.
And advice to callers.
On your toes, Robin.
So like, follow, and enjoy.
A wise decision.
The Weekend Warrior Facebook page.
Frankly, I can think of nothing more stimulating.
You're listening to The Weekend Warrior Show, presented by Cedars-Sinai on ESPN LA 710 and the ESPN app.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. That's my music right here. Chic. Good times. Exactly right. Each and every Saturday morning. I want to thank you all for being here with me every Saturday morning for 9+ years now. And for telling all your friends. It really means a lot to me. And it's crazy to do this from my living room at home. But you know what? We're still doing it. And it's great. Next week, my guest. Oh my God, I cannot wait. I cannot believe I got him as a guest. He's my favorite football announcer. He lives in Atlanta, Georgia, so he'll be calling in. But we're going to talk to him a lot about his career. I'm actually not going to even tell you his name yet. But get ready for next Saturday. It's going to be great. And I want to give a shout out to my favorite donut place in Ventura called Good Time Donuts. Her name is Sue. When you go in there, tell them you're a Weekend Warrior. Dr. Clapper sent you. And I want the donut that Dr. Clapper eats. She makes it special for me. God, is it good. Sweetest lady. Good Time Donuts in Ventura. All right, let's go to Aaron. He's hanging on the line. Aaron, welcome back to the Weekend Warrior Show. So nice to have you.
How are you, sir?
I'm good, Aaron. Thanks for hanging in there with me. You'll be my one and only caller. We'll end out the show together. Bring me up to date. You're welcome.
So I have lower back disc degeneration. I abused my back in my youth. I'm 52 now, but back in my 20s, I was a rower, and I put a lot of miles on my back. and I'm getting to the point where it's now grinding back there. I get kind of tickled. I can feel it, and every so often I get a lot of pain, and then it goes away. And I just know that one of these years, it's, you know, something's going to have to happen down there. And I'm wondering what your take on the, you know, disc technology is. Is it good to get it removed or fused or replaced or what?
So what do you do for a living?
I have a roofing company.
So you're supervising. You're not swinging a hammer anymore.
Correct.
And how tall are you and how much do you weigh?
I'm 6'8", and I weigh 307 pounds.
Wow. You're 6'8". So for you, 307 pounds is – you're a big guy. You're a really big guy. But you're also carrying more weight than you should. And let me give you – you listen to the show. You know what Clapper Vision is?
Yes.
Okay. What if you were now asked to come to someone's house and the complaint was that the doors, the back door, the front door, the side door seem to be warping more than they should. They're squeaking. They got to constantly plane down the doors because you can't fully close the door, and it's a security problem. You want to go to sleep at night. You want to be able to lock the front door, the side door. And they don't close all the way because literally the door jams themselves are slightly off. They don't fit the male-female of the door anymore. And you say to yourself, why would all three of these doors be so warped and so out of shape? And then the reason you're at this house is you've been called because they need a new roof. And what you've now determined is that the roof that they have on this poorly framed house to support the beams is supporting a Mexican tile roof. And they want you to put another Mexican tile roof on there. You as a roofer would say to this homeowner, you know what would help you a lot is if you had less weight on top of the roof, maybe I should put just some shingles instead of the Mexican tile, which won't weigh as much. That way you can fix these door jams and not have a problem of like this again in the future. How's that for a Clapper Vision?
That's an excellent Clapper Vision.
Because this is probably an issue you as a roofer have dealt with, where you have a homeowner who's not sophisticated enough to really understand that actually what's on the roof of the house impacts what happens to the walls and the door jams and all. It's all related. And you really can't do one without the other. So before I let someone with a knife or a cortisone epidural shot or anybody come at you with stem cells or other cockamamie ingredients for you, I got to go to the beginning, which is it's hard. My wife's a great cook. I love to eat. I already had a Wexler's bagel this morning. Believe me, this is not a good diet when I should be on a wheat belly diet. But the reality is what is living in around your belly button, the front of our body, that as we get older, and you're in your 50s, I'm in my 60s, it's probably related to hormones, we get a pot belly. And I don't care who you are, you're going to get one. Well, that 24/7 strain on the front of your spine is torturing the discs, the shingling of the spinous processes in the back of your spine. So, yeah. You'll let some guy do a disc replacement. You'll let some guy do a fusion of your spine or under the microscope take the disc out. Here's the problem. There are five discs between your rib cage and your pelvis. That's the lumbar spine. You start messing with one, 2 years after your surgery, you're going to now be overloading the next guy. Do some people need spine surgery? Yes, of course. You can't pee. You got a foot drop. I get it. But before you and I get further along about what kind of surgery to have or what kind of epidural to have, how about my opinion? I prefer you have none of them. So let this conversation today be the beginning of the rest of your life where you get a book called Wheat Belly, W-H-E-A-T Belly. I need you to read that book. And you'll appreciate how changing your diet simply, lose 5 pounds, 7 pounds, 12 pounds. I don't need you to lose 50 pounds. In 2 weeks, you need to do that, Aaron. before we have a conversation. I will give you plenty of advice on if you're MRI, whatever you need. But right now, if you are my younger brother, this is the advice I'd be giving you. Okay?
All right, sir. Thank you.
Wheat belly. And I want you to do me a favor. Today, I want you to find a total stranger. Do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me. I really appreciate the phone call. And to all of you weekend warriors, be safe, wash your hands, social distancing. This too shall pass. Until next week, I'll see you on the radio.
Nel cielo infinito.
Weekend Warrior is brought to you by Cedars-Sinai, with multiple primary care locations in Beverly Hills, the San Fernando Valley, and across the West Side. Cedars-Sinai is bringing expert care closer to you and your family. From checkups to consultations that guide you to specialized care, trust the experts at Cedars-Sinai to help manage your health right in your neighborhood. To learn more, call 1-800-CEDARS-1. That's 1-800-CEDARS-1. Or visit us online at cedarsinai.org/primarycare.